Welcome to Not Artificially Sweetened, a weekly podcast where we reflect on all things diabetes. Your hosts are specialist physician Stan Landau and diabetes specialist nurse Michael Brown. We are passionate about using our talents to change lives for the better. Our mission is to build bridges of insight and understanding between people with diabetes and the health professionals that facilitate their care. Nothing is off the table here as we discuss real people, their real issues and stories, and together discover real answers to many vexing practical issues in diabetes and its management. And we're back. Stan and I are both exhausted after a very successful CDE postgraduate forum last weekend, and we're pleased to be back with you bringing another episode of Not Artificially Sweetened. Welcome back, Stan.
Thanks, Michael. Busy week indeed, and lots of reflection looking back over this important meeting held. Now, we spoke about it at the introduction of the previous podcast, and now the week thereafter, the thing that struck me as most impressive was if you had to collect people who are involved in the care, people with diabetes, you get an enormous class photo. You know, we interviewed a vet. We spoke to an occupational therapist. There was an airline pilot. We had a global public health specialist. Yeah. And whilst not everybody is involved in day-to-day clinical practice for the person with diabetes, these things are incredibly important. And it was you who wrapped up the meeting very well, who said that, much like Shrek said, people are made up of layers. Diabetes care is also layered. People with diabetes are layered. And there's so much more going on than just the obsession with the management of the glucose levels, which for many practitioners becomes the sole aim of managing diabetes. You know, get the numbers right and everything will be good. Nice to learn from each other, with each other.
Absolutely.
And together with each other.
Yes, absolutely. I think my takeaway was to really understand that diabetes does not exist in isolation within a human being, but that human being exists within a context, within a society, within a nation. And we even took it further to the global health of the planet and also the worlds within us that influence our health. So if we really are to manage diabetes with great insight, we need to be aware of all these worlds within and without.
So for our listeners out there, before we introduce our studio guest today, thank you again for joining us on this free educational service brought to you by the CDE Academy. Remember that you can listen to us on our preferred social media networks, Spotify and the Apple Podcast system. Give us a like, share widely, and don't forget to drop us your questions or comments at podcast@cdediabetes.co.za. Now, Michael, as diabetes meetings and in general chronic care meetings become more and more layered, to use your language, we recognize that the person with diabetes is no less an important attendee of such meetings. And as you correctly said, and is a wonderful mantra, the nothing about us without us component.
For sure.
And because we align ourselves as an organization very closely with the SA Diabetes Advocacy Group, we had in fact invited people with diabetes themselves to join us. Now, this part of the audience weren't people specifically who work in the healthcare field. And our studio guest today is one such person. And you and I met Holly at the session. And because of our interactions with her, we decided she'd make a fine studio guest to come and share stories with us. Welcome to you, Holly. And we'll let you do the introduction.
Thank you. I'm Holly. When the SA Diabetes Advocacy Group, particularly Kirsten, sent a message to our WhatsApp support group for people with type 1 diabetes in Johannesburg, she said, if you're interested, the CDE would like to host people with diabetes at the conference because hashtag nothing about us without us. And if you're interested, please put down your details here. And I was immediately interested because I have a BSc in genetics and ecology, and I was diagnosed with diabetes in my second year of completing that. So it was kind of like a merging of all of my interests, and to be in a room with such amazing specialists who have such a wide range of views on diabetes was like, my mom said it was the most nerdy thing she's ever heard me be excited about, but I was so excited to be there because it was just amazing and I knew I was going to learn so much. So I was really for the opportunity when Kirsten said that I was one of the people chosen to be there.
So tell us the result of this almost experiment in building in the attendance of people with diabetes into a medical congress. How did you find it as a non-medical person, as a non-healthcare practitioner? And what were your main takeaways?
I thought it was, honestly, and this might be a word you're not expecting me to describe it by, but I thought it was epic. I felt so much more in control of my own diabetes journey because I got to speak directly to people who influenced my diabetes journey, specifically with all the companies who represent diabetes technology. That was incredible. Mm-hmm. Because I was there, I got to try a new CGM for the first time. I use a different CGM generally. Just me being there, the representative said, oh, do you like to put one on for the weekend and see how it works for you? And maybe that will make a difference in your life. I got to speak to the people who make the pen cap needles for the injections that I use every day. Mm-hmm. It might seem so insignificant to somebody without diabetes, but considering I use these things every day, it was really amazing to hear about what they do. And actually, they play such an important role in my life. I got to speak to the people who make the glucometers, which again, I think a person without diabetes would think, oh, you know, that's so unexciting. But one of the representatives from the glucometer company that I use said to me, it's actually so nice to speak to somebody who uses our product daily because we hardly ever get to interact with you. We're always interacting through healthcare agencies and the people who interact with you. So to have personal feedback on what you think could be improved and how you enjoy using our product is actually really useful. So I thought that part of it was amazing. And then also to be included in the conversation about us in terms of everyday life, especially when it came to the health professionals that maybe don't deal with diabetes every day. So the occupational therapists and all of those people, that was also really eye-opening because I just felt more included and diabetes care was now becoming more about patients rather than keep your patients in range and do this. And I really enjoyed that. And I personally enjoyed the part on climate change and diabetes because I did a big module of that and specifically urban heat islands and that kind of thing in my degree. So I was really into that one.
So just to expand on what you said, Holly, fantastic feedback there was that the global health specialist spoke that as global temperatures rise, people with diabetes seek care more quickly, they seek care more frequently. And there was fascinating data she presented on diabetes associated with pregnancy and gestational diabetes. And we take rising global temperatures for granted and we think it's a hot day, but actually at a micro level, at a community level, as a societal level, the impacts of just a few increasing temperature degrees for diabetes specifically, which is where she pitched her talk, really profound impact, things that we'd never considered. Now, I want to be a little controversial based on what Holly said, Michael. Listen to this. I've been in diabetes medicine for 20 years. And I say to people in industry, who's your actual customer? Because the way industry is set up in South Africa from a regulatory point of view, they will come and detail products, insulin, pens, devices to the medical practitioner. You almost have to sign a, you know, 40-page legal document that you are a medical practitioner and this information can't be shared by such and such. And at the end of the day, the doctor isn't necessarily the customer. The person with diabetes, perhaps, you could argue, is the sole customer. As Holly said, these are the needles that the person is going to use. Why are we detailing the doctor who may or may not have any particular interest in it, may not even remember during the course of a consultation? So, Holly, do you think that the pharma industry could be doing more to recognize that the person with diabetes is in fact the customer and the doctor merely is part of that process?
I think 100%, especially because in terms of being able to use the products, everything always gets wrapped up in, oh, will my medical aid cover this?
Sure.
And will this happen? And can I afford it? I think if we actually sat down with the people who supply the technology and the people who are going to be paying for the technology and the people who are going to be using the technology, mm-hmm. we would be in a much better place.
Right.
Just from my own perspective, I would really like to start pump therapy, but it's just at the moment not a viable option for me in terms of monthly consumables and then the actual pump and whatnot because of the plan that we're on and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of admin. But I've never really understood, and you know, maybe I'll get in trouble for saying this, but the lack of commitment to integrating all the new technology into specifically South African diabetes, because in my mind, and again, I'm not a healthcare practitioner, I don't work in insurance, so I don't have numbers, but surely the numbers mitigated by people who land up in hospital with things like DKA would far outweigh the cost of supplying people with technology like the Dexcom G7, like the Freestyle Libres, to have better management and insight into their diabetes than landing up in DKA. And also from a personal perspective, I've only been in DKA once and that was upon diagnosis. I never, ever, ever want to go back there if I can avoid it. And within 3 weeks of me being diagnosed, I was on a CGM. I begged. And they, but my nurse educator said to me, you know, we don't normally put such new patients on these things because you've kind of got to learn how to manage it without. You know, my mom always said you need to learn how to drive the skateboard before you can learn how to drive a car. And I said, no, please, I want all the information I possibly can have. I never want to go back there. If this is going to make my life easier, I'd also be more comfortable because I don't have to do as many finger pricks. To give you an idea, when I was diagnosed, I was doing upwards of 12 finger pricks a day because I was so worried about slipping into DKA again, which I knew was far off because logically I was on insulin now. I was on background insulin, which was going to be a buffer. I'd spoken to my doctors. We have an endocrinologist in the family, so I was lucky to have also that on call, if you will. But I was so terrified that I was just finger pricking. I went through so many test strips. My mom said, you're using them like sweets. And I just think that if we could actually get to a conversation where people with diabetes are allowed to speak about how life-changing these devices are directly to the people, number one, who supply them, and number two, who have to aid in funding them, I think it would be so much better just in terms of what would be accessible to us to help us manage our conditions.
Absolutely. An analogy I often use to medical fund managers regarding the utility of continuous glucose monitoring. Imagine driving between Johannesburg and Pretoria. It's a 50-kilometer road, fairly straight, a couple of bends in the way. Now imagine that I said to you, you must drive that blindfolded. You are, however, allowed to remove that blindfold 5 times during your journey. How does that sound? Now imagine a person trying to get through a day of blood glucose management, only pricking their fingers 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times a day.
Terrifying.
It's an analogy that makes a lot of sense. But unfortunately, we need to bridge the gap between the actuaries who tend to make a lot of their calculations in silos, the admissions versus the chronic medication silos never seem to meet. Forgive me, actuaries, if that's not so, but that's certainly how it appears on our side. So yeah, CGM is life-changing. And one thing we were exploring in a pre-forum meeting was greater access to CGM and greater, more cost-effective access. So watch this space.
Michael, to that point, I think that the Diabetes Summit coming up, co-chaired by the advocacy group and Sweet Life, are in fact going to be spending time deliberating over that. Is that correct?
I know it's one of their great initiatives at the moment. They have 5 tracks, and it's quite probably included in one of those tracks.
So having brought that point up and recognizing that you're attending that, there's another opportunity where people who are involved in the care of diabetes are going to be interacting on an equal platform with people with diabetes. We're going to be exceptionally strongly represented. As I understand, there's going to be government there. There's going to be funding, people from the medical aid or the funding option. So this kind of snowball effect that I can't imagine attending a diabetes meeting now without the co-inclusion of the person with diabetes. You know, I laugh when I think about it. When the vet spoke, there were so many similarities in the provision of diabetes care, from ensuring your pet is active and ensuring the best nutrition for your pet and ensuring insulin treatments are appropriate and delivered on time. It really said that even in the small animal world, you don't just send the dog in to see the vet. You have a committed owner there who's actually involved. Holly, would you say that there is still room for more inclusivity in these meetings? If you look back at this first one, if you could help us plan our meeting for next year and you said, you know, guys, something that was missing or something that wasn't so great, what would you say that would be?
So I don't know how viable this would be, because obviously it is a meeting for medical professionals. But I really, from my perspective, the talk that Jonathan Collins gave on his experience as a pilot with diabetes, I just think hearing more about personal experience with diabetes is really important, because it humanizes the condition. I think often we're reduced to numbers. And when you hear about the daily impact of diabetes on somebody's life, I think it puts into far more perspective what diabetes is to the person with diabetes and to their healthcare professionals.
Well, certainly in Jonathan's case, it really changed his life. It gave him back the life that he was so missing.
I think Holly's point is well made. We will continue to include people with diabetes, Mike. And I think those industry partners and funder partners who are uncomfortable with that need to have their needle shifted.
For sure.
To recognize that, in fact, we can't go back to doing it an alternative way. Perhaps there will be separate streams where one is having a particularly biological discussion and talking about molecular changes and how that may impact on the delivery of an insulin and the impact on storage within a clinical practice or in a pharmacy. That's one track that could be looked at. But certainly we should be telling our speakers that this needs to be put at a level where the person with diabetes' needs from an inclusivity, diversity, equity, justice component. Hey, there's now a term in medical education called JEDI, and it takes into account all of those 4 terms, J-E-D-I, that really we've worked hard at being specifically mandated to include in everything that we do. We really want to enhance that equity component.
The other thing I thought is, and this is my personal experience, but I can't be the only person. Well, maybe not so obviously if you can't see me, but I have my previous disability. So before I was diagnosed with diabetes, I've had cerebral palsy since birth. So that affects my ability to walk and some other things, balance, etc. Personally, I don't think it's a unique experience. I think there must be a lot of people who have the same experience, but the interactions of other chronic conditions with diabetes and how it impacts For me personally, because I have really bad balance already, if I have a low, I'm in like a really bad state. And so I have to be really careful about where I place sweets around the house in case I land up in a position I don't want to be in. And another thing we spoke to, I think her name was Toni Geddes, the sports psychologist. She was speaking about the importance of, as you put it, Dr. Lander, of movement. And so for me personally, that's been a challenge in my diabetes journey because I don't find it easy to just get up and walk around the block. It's really difficult, specifically because of my disability, but also because our world is so inaccessible. If you just look at the potholes on the road and now compare that to the pavement, it's tenfold. So I can't just decide to go for a walk around the block. That's not something that I can do. And I also can't do very long exercise like that because I get so tired because I basically have to hold up my entire body with my arms and do the walking at the same time because I use my walker. So I've been trying to find different ways to incorporate movement into my routine because I can't do the standard methods of exercise. So I've joined, and I bring down the mean age by a lot. I've joined an aqua group.
Probably one of the best forms of physical activity here.
So it works for me because it's great and it's not as strenuous on my body, but I get to do the movement and I feel much better and I can see the impact of it on the management of my diabetes. And I've also bought a tabletop, like a cycle thing, but it's just on the table. I use that with my arms, not my legs. You are able to put it under the table. It's marketed to be used so that people who work an office job don't have to be so sedentary. They can cycle under their desk while they type their emails or whatever.
Nice.
But I use it on the table and I use it with my arms to try and up my cardio because I've just found it so difficult to actually include exercise in my routine that, number one, doesn't impact me negatively in terms of my other disability. I get really stiff and my joints get sore. With arthritis being another autoimmune disease, and I know once you have one, it's really likely that you'll get another. I definitely think I can't be the only one who experiences things like this. I kind of do wish that there's more about overlapping conditions with diabetes at these events.
There should be. And the reason is that out of medical fund populations, if someone has a chronic health condition, they're likely to have other chronic conditions lumped with that. So your phenomenon is not unique, and the interactions between various chronic health conditions need to be considered. I love the title of one of your blogs, Holly, Spontaneity, a Privilege You Didn't Know Existed. Live a little. Tell us a little bit about spontaneity and maybe how it's a bit more difficult for you.
Actually, I think I wrote it after the forum. I initially started that blog from the perspective of having a physical disability and struggling with accessibility, particularly in the South African context, because, you know, we have so many other problems. To think about your disabled population is not really on the forefront of who's running our country's minds because, you know, we need to keep the lights on. Mm-hmm. So I just thought there's not much in the space, so I will put it there myself. And then I got diagnosed with diabetes and I thought, okay, well, now this adds a whole nother layer to that. And I found on the topic of spontaneity, it's been almost doubled. But when I wrote about that, I was just thinking about how I'm in my 20s and I'm supposed to be living my best life and doing all the things that you're supposed to be doing as a varsity student. And if you look at my life, I don't really do them. For example, watching the rugby on the weekend, most of my friends went out after we won and decided, okay, let's go have drinks and let's go have fun. Number one, I had to consider, okay, well, what have I eaten? What have I eaten? Can't drink on an empty stomach. Shouldn't do that generally, but especially as a person with diabetes. And then I had to decide, okay, well, where are we going? Are we going somewhere where there are stairs? If there are stairs, am I with people that I feel comfortable enough asking for help if there isn't an accessible entrance? How much have I had to drink? Because what if I need to go to the loo and they don't have an accessible bathroom? Mm-hmm. Also, what if I need to eat something? Am I going to have to take things with me from where I am now? Because we are drinking and I don't drink that much, but it can never be too safe. I need to have something on me. Do I have my glucagon on me if I'm going to go out and do this? Mm. Will my glucagon work if I've actually been drinking? And now there's about 1,000 different things that I have to consider before I just go, oh yeah, yes, I'll go out for drinks. And all of my friends were going, yes, yes, let's go celebrate. And I'm sitting there going, well, wait, I'm on calculation 80 of 100. Just give me like another 5 minutes to decide. And by the time I've decided, everyone's in the mood and wants to go. And then often I'm the person that gets left behind because I have to make choices that are better for my health. I don't think people realize the impact of just being able to make a decision and do it has on your life. And that's why I said the ability to be spontaneous about your decisions is a privilege. Because of my previous disability and now on top of it, my diabetes, I've experienced it my whole life where I don't just get to say, oh yeah, I'll do that. that's why I think there needs to be more said about overlapping conditions in the diabetes space. Mm.
While you're talking, Holly, what's become apparent as we're sitting here is that, in essence, you have two disabilities, you could say. You have a disability that is visible, the cerebral palsy you spoke of, and the obvious manifestations that a person who meets you might be aware of. But the diabetes is, to some extent, an invisible disability. And I never really thought about it in that way, that people with diabetes may also identify as a person with a disability. Is that a correct way of phrasing it?
To be honest, from my personal experience, and I think it's to do with stigma, because I've experienced it my whole life, but nobody wants to refer to themselves as a disabled person. And I use disabled person specifically because that's the label that I'm comfortable with. I know people are pushing for person first language, but I actually have a post on my blog. So if you're interested in my opinion, you can go and read it there. But I prefer the term disabled. Some policy that we have in terms of employment, if you tick that you have type 1 diabetes, that you count as a disabled person under South African, I think, employment law or something like that. I haven't looked into it personally. And a lot of people on the WhatsApp group were vehemently against being labeled as a disabled person. And I think it's because when you think disabled at the moment, and this is the reason why I'm sticking to calling myself disabled, because I think it needs to become a neutral term. To me, I say I'm a disabled person, or I am disabled, with the same connotations attached to it as me saying I have green eyes. For me, it's just a descriptor. And I think people generally, and what I've experienced, people with diabetes don't want to be labeled as disabled because of the stigma that comes with it, because you're immediately viewed as incapable, as almost a nuisance and a burden to whatever organization you're working with. Sure. And I think less so if you have an invisible disability, because you can sort of, I don't want to say switch it on and switch it off. You obviously can't switch off diabetes, but you can switch off people's perception of your diabetes. If you really don't want people to know that you have diabetes, you don't have to do your injections in public. You don't have to talk about it. You don't have to talk about what your blood sugar is doing. You don't really have to speak about it. With my other disability, like, it's out there. And I've definitely noticed the difference in perceptions people have of me if they've met me in an online context, Zoom meetings, etc., and then later find out, oh, you have a disability, versus meeting me initially, and now that's the first thing you see about me, and then you get to know me and you think, oh, okay, you know, she's actually compos mentis and all there and capable.
So tell us about that. What are their perceptions? What's the difference?
I'm hesitant to say this because I don't think that they should. I don't know if you've ever heard of the model minority.
No.
It was a study within a certain marginalized group. You have people who are more acceptable to those who are not the marginalized group than other people. Mm-hmm. So my experience with disability is if you have a mental disability or something like that, then you are less worthy or less valuable in the eyes of somebody who doesn't have any kind of disability than somebody maybe with. In disability, it works on a spectrum. Maybe it will be easier to explain it with type 1 and type 2. But my perception in the diabetes community is that type 1 diabetes is the good diabetes because people perceive it to be the one that you didn't do anything to yourself to put you in that position. Mm. And so I'm a type 1. Me and a type 2 are both experiencing diabetes. But the reaction of the community that does not have diabetes is very different because we encompass a space as type 1s where there's sort of less blame and less negativity associated with your condition. And I find the same with the difference between the severity of disability. So I always had to fight at school specifically. I think because people assume that disability and things like this come as like a package deal. And if you have one, you immediately have the other. Okay. But I always had to fight at school to be recognized for my academics because people didn't take me seriously because they thought, well, she's physically disabled, so there must be something wrong mentally also. I remember I was in grade 10. We were writing a math test the next week and we had a new grade 10 math teacher. And she said to me in front of the whole class, mind you, and she's never met me. And I'd been at my school for 13 years. Everybody knew me. Holly, I know you learn slower than others. So if you need extra help with the maths before the test, let me know. The next week at prize giving, I was awarded my academic colors. So that spoke for itself. I didn't really have to confront her about that. So people assume things about a disability that you have up front. And when you start telling people about your diabetes, people assume things about your diabetes because of stigma and the way that people perceive difference.
I mean, in essence, it's a myth what you're saying here, and it takes away all the diversity that's included, even amongst people with diabetes in general, the type 1 versus the type 2. And fascinating. And Michael, this is what I so love about Podcast Sense here. We've interviewed so many guests, and there isn't a guest we've interviewed. We as healthcare workers haven't learned together and with. Here again, Holly, you've introduced Michael and I to a concept that perhaps is completely new and worthy of interrogation on our side so that we can become even more attuned to the needs of people with diabetes and recognize that within the diabetes framework, there is so much much, you know, you're a type one, you're a type two. That isn't perhaps enough. It doesn't tell the richness of the individual story.
Absolutely. Let's take a short break as we hear our next advocacy message from SA Diabetes Advocacy.
SA Diabetes Advocacy would like to wish everyone a happy Diabetes Month. On the 14th of November every year, we celebrate World Diabetes Day. This year, we'll be joining Sweet Life's Community Walk on Saturday, 18th of November at 9 a.m. They will set up 3 to 5 kilometer Sweet Life Walk events in Durban, Joburg and Cape Town, headed by community members. Registration begins at 8:30 and the walks will end in picnic meetups already organized by the diabetes community. In Johannesburg, it will take place at the Johannesburg Botanical Gardens, in Cape Town at the Greenpoint Park, and in Durban at the Durban Botanical Garden. There is also an option to attend virtually. If you'd like to sign up and see other events taking place this November, please visit www.sweetlife.org.za and search for the article All the World Diabetes Day Events in SA 2023.
Thank you so much, Kirsten, and we really encourage that if you are in the area that you attend the walks on the 18th of November. So while we're on the subject of advocacy, I'd just like to remind our listeners of World Diabetes Day coming up on 14 November. The International Diabetes Federation has identified the theme for this year as Know Your Risk, Know Your Response. And obviously that would vary according to whether you are a person at risk for having diabetes, a person with diabetes, or a health professional. But essentially, the message is quite clear. If you have any of the risks for type 2 diabetes, that you try and find those out and that you take an appropriate response. Also on healthcare professionals, we need to start opening our eyes. So if we see people for maybe a common cold and we understand that maybe they have hypertension or dyslipidemia, they may be carrying a bit of excess fat around their tummy, maybe have a family history of type 2 diabetes or previous gestational diabetes, these are factors that would lead us to say, let's check your blood glucose for the presence of diabetes, or in fact, an earlier stage called intermediate hypoglycemia, the Americans call it prediabetes, and let's try and quantify your risk and respond appropriately to the presence of that risk. Because remember, very importantly, diabetes care is more about prevention or reducing risk than it is of treatment. If we can prevent the need for treatment, that's always first prize. So don't forget World Diabetes Day, 14 November. Check out Sweet Life and the SA Diabetes Alliance on social media. They're putting out a lot of messages regarding World Diabetes Day. Let's try and raise the profile of diabetes in terms of advocacy, not only for 14 November, but let's try and make it a year-round phenomenon.
Ollie, you're somebody who's very busy, and your bio says that you're a law student, public speaker, writer, critical thinker, you're a person with diabetes. In the advocacy space, is much of your energy around disability in terms of matters beyond diabetes? And if so, share a little bit about that with us as we begin to wrap up today's session.
I would say I'm sort of in the middle right now of trying to balance the two, because both are obviously really important to me, but I have more experience. I'm only 2.5 in diabetes years. So I'm still quite young and I still have a lot to learn.
Okay.
But I think having my previous disability did give me a jump start on that kind of thing, because I was already involved in advocacy. But I would say the majority of it is focusing right now on my other disability. World Diabetes Day is on the 14th of November, and then Persons with Disabilities Day is on the 3rd of December. So they are very close to each other. For my other disability, I've been working with a company called Run to the Monster. They focus on EDI training virtually. I was asked by them to help film a video for World Disability Day. So I've been doing a lot of that. But then obviously I came to the forum and then I was like, oh, I've got stuff to do for diabetes too. I always say to my friends and family that if they don't wear blue for diabetes on the 14th of November, then they don't love me. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But I do try and get them to wear the blue and to check their sugar. I'm constantly asking people when they say, oh, I don't feel like this or I feel like that, have you checked your sugar? So I definitely am coming from a place where it was more focused on my other disability, but I am trying to find a happy medium of the two, because both are really important to me. And I think the work done in both sectors is really important.
So Holly, what I see in front of me is someone who's very balanced. And I think that you're really trying to make a difference in terms of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging in your sphere of influence. Maybe just leave our listeners with some final messages that you would like them to hear. And remember that on this podcast, we try and bring both health professionals and people with diabetes into the same space. So what are your key messages that you would like to put out into this community?
I think my key message is to be aware of yourself. And I mean that in both screen yourself for diabetes, check your sugar every so often so that you catch it early. You don't want to be in DKA from personal experience. And what I always say about disability is that at any point in time, anybody, and we will all end up there in old age, it's the only group of people that everybody will one day belong to. And what I mean by that is obviously you can't change your race. Like you'll be white forever, you'll be black forever. You can't change that group. But disability is one of those things where it's really flexible. And so, you know, you might be in a car accident tomorrow and then all of a sudden your life changes. And I think it's the same with diabetes. You might be not a person living with diabetes today. And then tomorrow, all of a sudden you've been diagnosed and what must you do? I think the importance is to just realize that, okay, maybe if you're not a person with diabetes, and in this case, you're a healthcare professional or something like that, just because it doesn't affect you immediately, it doesn't mean it's not going to affect you in the future. So if you think you don't have a responsibility to advocate for people with disabilities and with diabetes, I would say you're incredibly wrong, because you never know what tomorrow holds. And maybe the work that you've done yesterday is now going to be actually helping you personally tomorrow. Because I think if people don't think they have a personal responsibility to do something, they are less likely to do it. And I didn't really understand that in the disability and diabetes space because of how, I don't want to say how likely, but because of how easy it is for your status to change.
Mm. Very well put there. And I'm so pleased we bumped into you at the forum, and I'm pleased you enjoyed yourself, and the learnings we're going to take from this really can form part of the fabric as we go forward in a couple of weeks after our little break here. We certainly need a little mental health break just to reflect and to consolidate all of these learnings, because we want to put them into practice ultimately. We want the teachings to have an impact on the work that we do, as opposed to just patting ourselves on the back and saying, look, we spent a few hours together and we learned. That learning is only valuable for us if we can put it into practice. And beyond the skills and the knowledge, it's the attitudes and the behaviors that we can always do better at in terms of our work. So, Holly, thank you so much for coming along. It's been an absolute pleasure having you as a guest on our 37th podcast already, Michael. I hope everybody's week ahead is a good one. We're heading out of this cold few days here in Johannesburg, blazing hot sun here for this weekend, and top of the world that, hey, we won the rugby this weekend.
Wonderful.
Wasn't it great to have everybody together on that Saturday night at the end of the first day session? So go Borka. And for everybody out there, thank you for joining us. Remember, share your thoughts, comments, questions, your own experiences as well can help enrich our fledgling community here online. And that's a goodbye from me.
Thank you, Stan. And Holly, thank you so much for blessing us with your time and your insights. We really appreciate your contribution to our podcast series.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. I'm just going to leave you with some parting words that I used to close the postgraduate forum, and I'd like to apply it to this podcast series for our listeners. As you've gone through listening to our episodes, I'd like you to reflect on these things. What did you learn through these podcasts? What do you think about what you've learned? What do you feel about what you've learned? How were your thoughts and feelings modified by your values, attitudes, beliefs, and past experiences? What will you do differently in your clinical practice or in your self-care management? And how are you going to measure the benefits? And as Stan alluded to, our BOCA did it for us, and they showed us how amazing it can be when we all work together. So with that, we thank you for being with us, and we look forward to joining you next week. Remember that our podcast email is podcast@cdediabetes.co.za. Catch us on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, and we look forward to being with you next week. Over and out from us. Thank you for joining us on Not Artificially Sweetened, where we aim to build bridges of insight and understanding between people with diabetes and the health professionals that facilitate their care. Anything we discuss is for your reflection, education, personal growth, and entertainment only. You join this podcast at your own risk, and we are not responsible for any omissions, errors, or unwanted medical outcomes. Please note the following important, specific disclaimers. For people with diabetes, the health professionals on this podcast are not your personal caregivers. Always discuss any new information with your diabetes team before acting on any aspect of it. The views and opinions discussed are those of the hosts only and do not represent those of any other entity. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you encounter in this session. Anything you learn or experience here cannot substitute for personalized, professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. For health professionals working in diabetes, always discuss any new information with your clinical team before acting on any aspect of it. You are personally accountable and liable for any choices made in a clinical setting according to your level of training and legal scope of practice. Any information or insights gained here must be used with your professional discretion and with the developing base of clinical evidence, local and organizational laws, regulations, guidelines, and protocols. Good luck with your diabetes care missions. Till next time.
And it's a wrap.
Yay!